And welcome, everyone. We got our D1 Baseball Weekend Preview Instagram Live. I am Michael Patrick Rooney. I am joined by, we're going to call it two legends of the game, since we're going to use that word. We've got the great Dave Neal, Coach Neal, if you will. And we've got the great Kendall Rogers, the pride of East Texas, the pride of the Republic. Yes, that's right. And so, gentlemen, let's do that. So, Coach Neal, because Kendall just mentioned this, but I think it's the perfect kickoff before we get to our series. So, Coach Neal, you were doing SEC games on television really before the SEC in baseball was a thing. Like, you were there when it was an infant. And so, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it's to look back on that, it was one game a week. It was a Saturday game on Fox Sports Net. And it was the only time a game was ever televised was the Saturday game. And so when we rolled in, it was kind of a big deal, right? I mean, it was worth the TV. It was crazy. And now I think about the hundreds of games, thousands of games in college baseball that are on some platform. It's nuts to think about where it's come from. I started in 96 was my first year of doing it. And think about where it is now. It's crazy.
Crazy to think about. Yeah, just nuts to think about. So, all right, so Kendall – I want to get you in on this too. So I want, like to me, and again, this is going to, I'm going to come off as an SEC homer just for a minute here, but the SEC regular season, there's nothing like it in our sport, right? 30 games, 10 straight weeks. If you have finals that week, sorry, not sorry. It's like,
we're talking SEC.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking to you, University of Wisconsin, with odd numbers of teams and stuff like that. But anyway, sorry, Barry Alvarez. He is one of my favorite Notre Dame assistant football coaches of all time. That said, but Hoover is also, you know, like, that's the creme de la creme of our conference tournaments. I mean, again, any college baseball fan, any baseball fan, if you've not been to Hoover, you better – that's got to be on your bucket list, like, stat. It is an unreal baseball event. So that gets me to my question. Coach Neal, I'll start with you, and then I'll go to you, Kendall. Tell me your first Hoover, your first memories of Hoover, if you can remember the year and any memories. Coach Neal, you go first, and then Kendall, see, we'll go you next.
All right. I get my years all mixed up, but I will say this, though. It had to be 97 or 98, and there was one game that stands out to me. Alabama under Jim Wells in the late 90s, really good program. And it seems like they're trending that way again, but they were always up for SEC championships, and they were just playing at a high level. They got into a late night game on like a Friday night, and I can't remember who it was against, but they ran out of like guys to swing the bat, and they brought up some dude. And I wish Barry Allen, the legendary Barry Allen,
Barry,
because he would tell me in a second who this was.
That's right.
But some guy came up in like the 10th inning for Alabama who had maybe three at bats all year and hit a home run to end the game for Alabama and kept their dreams alive. And I cannot remember if they ended up winning that tournament or not. But he hit a bomb over the left field fence. Remember back in 90, whatever this was, 98 maybe, the fences were, it was 340 down the line and left and 380 in the alleys. And this guy hammered it into the parking lot. And I always said to myself, I mean, this is why I love the game, because here's a guy, and this is why I love college baseball, right? This guy had three at-bats, and he won a game for Alabama. Might have propelled him to the championship that year. I just can't remember. But that was it. And it was a full, you know, in Alabama, and also Auburn under Hal Barrett at that same time, very good.
Yes.
So you'd have Alabama and Auburn at the tournament every year in the 90s. And it was, I mean, full houses every, even if they didn't play each other.
The Gabe Gross era back then.
Yeah. So, you know, those are the things. There's a lot. I could go on and on and on and on about it. But those are the things I think about early on. And I remember, Kendall, I don't know when you started doing this, but there was one year, I think it was 96, we started in Hoover. And then in 97, somebody had the great idea that we'd go to Columbus, Georgia, and play in some single-A ballpark that was built in 1906. And I don't think they did anything to it. You remember that?
No, in 96 I was 13, so no.
It was in 97.
That's a dig.
Okay, so I was 14.
Right. Yeah, so you should remember it.
Since that might have been illegal labor if I was covering that tournament at that point.
That's right. Well, you were working for yourself back then, Kendall. So good.
But it was a press box that was it was like three rooms, so you had everybody in this. I mean, it was just an awful experience. It was 120 degrees. It was, and Commissioner Kramer at the time vowed we'd never go back there to play at that place. So we've been at Hoover ever since.
Oh, I love it. Kendall, do you remember your first Hoover?
I really don't, but I can give you my best memory.
Yeah, please.
So I'm going to go with 2 years ago. And Dave, I can't remember if you were on the call for this game or not. I was there, so I wouldn't know. I wasn't watching on TV. But I think it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, LSU and Mississippi State played a game that lasted 6 hours and 43 minutes. I think Gunnar Halter had a walk-off hit for Mississippi State. I want to say the game ended at 3:08, and I'm pretty sure – and he might get mad. If he does, that's fine. But I'm pretty sure that Dari and KP might have been slurring their speech during the I'm fairly certain I got to the Embassy Suites that night, turned on the postgame show, and those two guys might have been slurring their speech a little bit.
Speaking in tongues.
Words in my story that night, too. But, yeah, I got back to the hotel, I think, at 3:30. Needless to say, I did not make the 10 a.m. game the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that wasn't me, by the way. That was not me. I was looking at my eyelids. I was doing the day game. That was Tom and KP, and I can't remember if Ty Walker was with him or not. But thankfully, that was not me.
Well, then we had, what was it, maybe 2 years ago, we had the game between Florida and LSU that ended at 2 a.m. on a fog delay, and they had to come back at 10 and finish the game.
Oh, that was awful. That was
the conga line going in the concourse?
Yeah, that was that. Those are great moments, right? The fans are at those type of games are the ones you love, right? They're the hardcore, they're in it to win it kind of fans.
I am in it for LSU fans at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, those fans. Hey, so gentlemen, I've only been to Hoover once, and it was 2019. And so, like, as a college baseball nerd that I am, you can imagine how excited I was to be there. And Coach Neal, I was your dugout reporter in those day games for the first couple of days. And but the one thing that I take away from that is, you know, everything about the tournament is amazing, right? Like, they have the big tent with stuff that looks like a state fair. But I'll never forget, it was the Wednesday night game, LSU and Mississippi State. It's a Wednesday night, and there's 13,000 people in the Hoover Met to watch a college baseball game on a Wednesday night. You're just like, hey, like, if you love this sport, this is nirvana, right? Like, this is awesome.
It's the closest thing to the College World Series without being at the College World Series. Like, from the flags when you walk in the place, it looks just like flat. Just the way they kind of – you know, they set things up like it's a big-time event. And guess what? When you act like it's a big-time event, then the players and coaches and staff start to act like it's a big-time event too, and it breeds really good baseball.
Yeah.
There was – you know, you talk about fans, and this is one of those memories. And, again, I wish I could identify the year, but it was probably in the early 2000s. Ole Miss and Mississippi State played in the championship game on a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And I remember getting to the ballpark early, noonish, and I'd just been in the stadium 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, you know, the one road into the Hoover Met, it is now wall-to-wall parking lot. I'm like, this is going to be crazy. It was as – an hour before the game, you know, it split right down the middle, right? You've got your blue and the red over one side. You've got your maroon and white on the other side. And they are right down the middle, and they are going at it an hour before first pitch. And I kept saying to myself, is this not amazing that we're sitting here at a college baseball game? And I remember growing up, I went to Florida State, and we were really good in the 80s when I was at Florida State. But it was only rare. It was when Miami came to town, would you see a big crowd, right? And I'm thinking to myself, look at what this has become. I mean, it's nuts to think about that and where it is now, and these stadiums and all that other stuff have kind of followed suit. But that, to me, is one of my favorite memories, is that Ole Miss Mississippi State championship game, 10, 15 years ago.
That's awesome.
Fans, guys, like, you know, LSU, whatever seed they're going to be, whether they're the eighth or ninth seed or whatever, like, they may go in there as, like, the ninth seed, and I bet you LSU will still have 5,000 people there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
The way they are. Like, they love going to that event.
That's awesome. Hey, let's do one more history question, then we'll get to the series. So, and I've never asked you this one before, Kendall, so I'm really curious your answer. So, Coach Neal, when you started covering college baseball in the mid to late 90s, who was, like, the first star? Like, who – and it could have been somebody that became a star afterwards. You didn't even know they were a star yet. Or you know, so I'm just curious, like, who was like, an initial star player that jumps out?
Brad Wilkerson comes to mind.
Oh, gosh dang, he was good.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back at that time. There's so many. The other day, and this probably I was tweeting out. Remember, I found my old scorebooks, and I was doing Braves games, some Braves games at the time on Fox Sports Net as well. And I'm going through this. I had one game where Chipper Jones was playing left field. We had Vinny Castilla. The Braves were trying to find a spot for Vinny, right? And they're trying to. They also had Wes Helms down in AAA, and they were, you know, they were loaded at third base, and Chipper volunteered to play some left field. So anyway, that's here nor there, but it was kind of cool looking through my scorebooks. But there was one kid, and this was – I can't remember when he got out, but Kentucky had a left-handed pitcher named Scott Downs. You guys remember him.
Yeah.
Who was really good at Kentucky, but you didn't know how good he was. And he ends up – we had that huge, big breaking ball. And I ended up doing some college games of his and was always impressed with him, but he wasn't the biggest guy out there. And I never thought, you know, like, this guy's going to be a big leaguer. But I ended up doing a Cubs-Braves game one day, and Scott Downs is starting for the Cubs. And I'm like, goodness gracious, the same old breaking ball. So
that's awesome. You know,
there are all kinds of stories like that. Brandon Larson at LSU, that I forget exactly what.
40 jacks. It was 97. 40 jacks.
It was. He hit the longest home run that I've ever seen. It was at Baum Stadium in Arkansas. He hit it so far over the batter's eye, straightaway center field, that I still talk. I saw him just not too long ago. And we were talking about the home run, and he remembers it and talks about it, and it was crazy. But that's another guy. You know, he had a short career at the bigs. He had some injuries and kind of hurt him a little bit down the stretch. But, I mean, I could go – I mean, there's so many guys. I mean, think about it. That's 25 years.
Brandon Larson almost ruined me as a high school coach. I'm the high school coach at Malvern Prep at the time when Larson's hitting 40 jacks. And Jim Schwanke, who's an agent now, was the hitting coach for Skip Bertman at LSU. And so he had this blast system, like these – it wasn't even like a real book. It was like a leaflet and like videos. And, I mean, we were doing the blast system at Malvern Prep in suburban Philly. Not very well. And we didn't hit 40 home runs combined for the season. But we were trying to do the Brandon Larson blast system. It was – I don't even know what the – and blast was – blast was an acronym. I have no idea what any of the letters stood for. It is – so good. KR, who was your first star in college baseball? First star player.
So are we going to – so are we talking when I started covering the sport or, like, that I remember even from childhood days?
So I'm going to do childhood for myself, but you could pick whatever.
So I'm going to go with childhood because it's actually a pretty good story. So the way I got into college baseball, guys, was, you know, I grew up my parents were big A&M baseball fans, and we would go over there when I was kids, and, you know, like, I fell in love with, like, the atmosphere over there, like, going to Olsen Field, going to Dish Falk at UT, and watching A&M versus Texas Tech or whatever. So I remember, I think it was 1993, A&M that year had Jeff Granger, Trey Moore, and I want to say Kelly Wunsch's or 1-2-3 guys. Like, they had three top two rounders in their rotation. When they get to Omaha that year, I think they're, like, the number two national seed. And, you know, back in 89, we know it's all been rehashed, but, you know, Ben and LSU beat A&M in 89. Well, in 93, A&M, I think it's like the bracket. I want to say it's bracket quarterfinals. A&M's playing LSU, and I think A&M has like a 6-2 lead or something in the middle innings. But back then, guys, like 6-2 lead was nothing. Like
nothing.
I mean, you may give up 19 runs before this game's over. Well, A&M was up 6-2 late in the game. You know, I'm sitting there watching with my dad. We're thinking, like, oh, this is, you know, they're finally going to get it this time. Well, a guy by the name of Todd Walker hits a grand
T-Walk
that game late in the game. So I told Todd one time, I said, hey, man, I just want to let you know, when I was 10 years old, like, you broke my heart, man.
Oh, no.
That's T-Walk. All I can remember. But on that note, you know, I followed LSU a lot when I was a kid because Eddie Furness, who's now a doctor in East Texas, he played in Nacogdoches High. Well, I was from Lufkin. That was their rival. So I remember watching Eddie as a kid in high school or when he was playing in high school. And then I obviously followed him when he was at LSU. So it's funny now to see guys like that and even guys that, like, I remember covering in college, like Will Bolden, Nebraska. Like, I remember talking to Will Bolden. Parents when he was a player in Nebraska, like in the stands, just talking to him about their kid from Conroe. I remember watching, you know, all sorts of guys like that. So it's just neat to think back, and I'm starting to feel old because I'm almost to the point where I'm going to start covering the kids of guys that I covered. And that's when you know you're really old.
That's yeah. hey, Coach Neal, you're probably in that mode, but like for me in college baseball, I have one teammate from college who has a son playing college baseball. I have three classmates I have a guy from my American Legion team whose nephew is Chris Newell. Yeah, it's that messes with your mind.
Yeah, I listen. I'm not that old. I'm not as old as you guys, obviously. so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's good. We'll be covering Sam Neill here, the young left-hander, sooner than later.
Let's hope he doesn't blow his arm out.
Yes, that's right. Hey, so I'll give you guys my guy. My guy growing up, you remember when the only time you could watch college baseball was Sunday night games on ESPN and then the College World Series in Omaha.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, Billy Bates, the second baseman at Texas, and Kobe Kerlin was their shortstop. But Billy Bates was my guy. Leadoff hitter, 5'0", and I'm pretty much 5'0". Billy, and he was awesome. I mean, he was such a good player. He's not in the College Baseball Hall of Fame, but he's always on the ballot. And I gotta do a better job memorizing his kind of resume, because it is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Texas played in 3 national championship games at that time, or so there's something, you know, like those teams were really, really good. Anyway, Billy Bates, number one at Texas, my guy.
I was going to add one more guy, too. I remember a lot when he played at UT.
Who was it?
Brooks Kiesnick.
Oh, Kiesnick was great, too.
Yeah, he was an outstanding player at Texas. Yeah.
You know, when I was in college, I worked in Tallahassee right after I got out of college in the late 80s, early 90s, and Florida State was rolling with Mike Martin, and you guys might remember these names. They had a middle infield that may have been the best middle infield in college baseball history with Luis Alcea and Bien Figueroa.
Oof.
The fact that those two guys were in college playing middle infield was crazy. They were making plays that just you're shocked. I mean, just seriously, you're like, why are they here? What is going on?
Coach Neil, were you in Tallahassee for the Richie Lewis era?
Oh, yeah.
He's another all-time favorite.
Lewis, yeah.
Pitcher wearing number 4, and he had a hammer breaking ball.
Were you there, Eddie, too?
For who?
Eddie Perez?
No, I just left when Eddie got there. Yeah, I missed Eddie, unfortunately. And he likes to tell me that it was the best era of Florida State baseball.
Well, as we know, Coach Neil, it's no offense to the baseball program, but it's a golf school now. Between you and Brooks Koepka, winning titles, just putting Berkey down.
Yeah, well, you know, Berkey has to, you know, he sometimes, especially when Tennessee baseball is rolling, his ego gets a little big. And I'm glad that you kind of circle back around and kind of let him realize that, you know, there's still a long way to go. You know,
Kendall keeps him humble on the football side, too.
Yeah. Kendall, by the way, I'm sure you've heard Berkey throughout the year, right? He has been on you nonstop about his balls. Do you catch all that stuff he's throwing your way?
Oh. I don't have enough words to keep up with that guy.
He works quick now. He does work quick.
Kendall, he feels like when you had them, I forget where it was, you had them outside the top 16 or something, I think, at one point, right? Was it something like that? And he swears because he jumped on you that whole weekend that you moved him up.
He's
he
not
just because of him.
He's not that important. Come on.
No. He's a hashtag influencer. So.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely an influencer.
I like it. All right, boys, let's play the feud. So the way we're going to do this, Coach Neil, is we'll go around the horn. You'll give us a series. Kendall will give us a series. I'll give us a series. And we'll just keep working around. And we will work off of you, Coach Neil. Kendall, do you have Coach Neil's series in front of you so you don't
– I do. I can't
– You don't pillage?
I can't believe he picked 2 Texas schools, though. I'm very offended by that.
I like it. Coach Neil, start us off. Which one do you want to go with first?
All right, here's where I'm going to go. This is one to me that I'm anxious to see because I'm going to go LSU and Auburn this weekend.
Okay. Do you have it? Are you covering it?
No, I'm not. I'm actually doing. What am I doing? I should know what I'm doing. I'm doing Ole Miss and Texas A&M.
Ooh,
it's
that's
not until Saturday. I've got 48 hours.
That's right. Plenty of time.
And I had Louisville and Vanderbilt last night, so I'm just kind of decompressing from that, right?
Yeah, that's
getting my energy back, and then I'll get to
work. We'll be good.
I think LSU-Auburn to me is one to keep an eye on, only because of where LSU is. Auburn coming off a sweep on the road. They have struggled all year. First series win that they've had all year. They've had some really, really bad luck. And look, Auburn is on the outside looking in, and I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but they're still in the hunt to get to Hoover. And this team is not as bad as I think their record looks, and you hear it all the time, but I really believe that they're a pretty good team. They're starting to get some arms back, and they're playing the three teams in front of them, right? Because only 12 of the 14 are going to Hoover. The three teams in front of them, they play the next three weekends, and it starts with LSU. And I'm always wondering where LSU is mentally, the pressure that these kids are under every single day that they take the field. You know, it takes a certain type of player to play there, right? And if you have a couple of those guys that can't handle that, but you're still running them out there because you're their best players, but the pressure mounts, it's going to be a long year. And so I don't know what to make of this team yet with LSU. Obviously, some bad luck on the mound for them. But I just think this LSU-Auburn series, I think it's interesting in what's at play. And it's not for the championship, but there's so much more at stake. And LSU's making a run to try to get into the big tournament as well. So there's a lot at stake for both teams.
I like that one. You know what? I'm going to comment on that for a second. And KR, you and I have talked about this offline.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give this as my opinion. I think Paul Maneri might be – this is the craziest statement I may make, and I make some wild statements. Paul Maneri might be the most underrated coach out there. When you think about – I'm not saying he's not famous. He is famous in our sport. But when you think about coaches who have been to Omaha, you've got Dave Van Horn's been eight times. I'm talking active coaches. Dave Van Horn's been eight times. Sully's been seven times. Paul Maneri's third. He's been six times. And – you think about that stretch that LSU had just a couple years ago. They were a top eight seed, which is really hard to do in that league. I mean, top eight seed is you've had an incredible regular season. Yeah. LSU was a top eight seed six consecutive seasons. I mean, to do that in the SEC is so difficult. But to your point, Coach, you know, like LSU is it doesn't even feel real that they're not a regional team right now. But we'll see. Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just such a weird team in the sense that, like, last week, you know, Landon Marceau throws really well for them. Then all of a sudden, like, he comes out of the game, LSU gives up a seven spot. And then on Sunday, it's like, oh, we're hitting the ball really well, so our pitching is going to decide to stink. So, like, they just can't put all the pieces together. And if they can find a way to do that, which I don't know if you can do it this late in the season, but if you can find a way to do that, they're all of a sudden a pretty decent team, but that's not happening.
Yeah, they got two great true freshmen. I mean, Cruz and – hey, Trey Morgan, if it was a voting thing, Trey Morgan could get votes for SEC Player of the Year. If you look at his SEC stats, it's remarkable what he's doing. But anyway, it's interesting. KR, what are you going with for your first series?
Man, I'm going to go way away from the SEC. I'm going to go with Central Michigan and Ball State. What a
match. Ooh, that's a good one.
CMU leads that league by one game over Ball State. But the third-place team, Western Michigan, guys, is five games behind – Ball State. So that gives you an idea of how good those two teams have been. When you look at pitching matchups, John Baker and Chase McDermott are two of the better arms in the country, the one and two guys for Ball State. And then with CMU, Jordan Patty threw a no-hitter a couple weeks ago. He's throwing really well. Then Andrew Taylor's throwing really well for them as well. So that pitching matchup, but those two guys against each other should be fascinating. Jordan Bischel, you know, we talk about underrated coaches. You know, how about the job that Jordan Bischel's done in 3 years at CMU? Obviously, last year got canceled, but gets him to a regional 2 years ago. They look like they're heading back to a regional again this year. So Jordan Bischel's stock for me is rising. That ought to be an awesome series this weekend in the MAC. It's not every year, guys, that we get a series this big in the MAC that has maybe potentially national implications.
How about that? And so Ball State, Coach Neal, this is incredible. Ball State is – they are 4-3 versus Kentucky and Arizona, all on the road. Think about that. Ball State coming out of the gym – has four wins and three losses against the likes of Kentucky and Arizona. Arizona's like a top eight seed right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you wonder if those middle of the road conferences are starting to close the gap a little bit. You know, I don't know. It seems like there are some more important games at that level than there have been.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me also wonder, too, you mentioned Jordan Patty, Kendall, about the no-hitter. What is there, 18 no-hitters right now in college baseball?
It's been a ton.
And he was a perfect game at that. But it makes me also wonder what's going on in college baseball. I mean, we're chasing down a record of no-hitters this year. I mean, we've still got a ways to go. I think 23 or 4 or something's a record. But I'd like to get your opinion. Like, what's going on with the hitting in college baseball? And I'll add one more thing before you answer that question. I look at the SEC, and I go back 10 years. There were half the league hitting over 300. right now, like using SEC numbers. And you could even say the ACC, the same thing, but there's only a couple teams over 300 in either league now.
Yeah, you go first, KR.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I think my point is that you're right on the averages. Averages are really weird this year. It's like if you look at Tennessee, for instance, I haven't looked at their updated stats, but when I saw them against A&M a couple weeks ago, I think they had like two guys in their lineup that were hitting over 300.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but like from what I've seen of those guys, that lineup's a heck of a lot better than that. And so there's some really deceiving averages out there in college baseball right now.
Yeah, and I would say too, Coach Neil, like the big layoff I think is – you know, there's a lot of trends that are away from contact, away from bat to ball. Yeah. But I also think the lack of repetitions have really hurt two areas. They've hurt hitters' bat to ball skills. You know, like a Judd Fabian punching out 11 times in one weekend. I don't think he's doing that if he's got all those at bats building up over time instead of having a year break in the middle. And the other thing is strike throwing. You know, and you combine those two things where hitters don't have the repetitions. Their bat-to-ball skills are not as sharp as they would have been. And then pitchers spraying it all over the place, and you're more apt for no-hitters. It's harder to get hits. It's interesting.
He's a face Jack Leiter every game, and he'd be fine.
Seriously.
That's good. I know.
Hey, I got Florida and Kentucky tomorrow night, and we got to talk to Sully today, and we talked about that, where Judd Fabian had a different look in his eye against Leiter than he's had all year. He looked like a kid just playing pickup hoops in his neighborhood in a game that he was not going to lose. Like, just like that, just I'm purely here to compete, and let's just put all of the nonsense aside. It was really cool to see. So, I got to give you a series.
Yeah, Kendall, I'm waiting on your series. You keep
okay. You know what? You know what? Coach Neil, I put on our topics for tonight that we're going to talk about the best convenience store iced teas. So before we even go there, because you're an iced tea connoisseur, I'm just going to go straight. I'm going to go the Wawa Bowl. I'm going to go St. Joe's at LaSalle. They are first and second place in the A-10 North. I don't think it's officially called the Wawa Bowl, but it should be. So, yeah, there you go. St. Joe's at LaSalle, and they're duking it out for the A-10 North title. So there you go, Coach Neil.
That's a good series, but is there, like, any special, like, convenience store iced teas that I don't know about?
Coach Neil, care to comment?
Oh, my goodness. Listen, you know, as much as one of the bad things about this COVID stuff has kept me from being on the road and going to my spots on the road driving for this unsweet tea. I found this QT. First, it was peach, unsweet tea, a little peach flavor. And then they switched it up on me, Runes, last couple months. They went raspberry, and it's a new winner. Raspberry unsweet tea from QT is the winner.
So first of all, Coach Neil, one of these days I need you and Hoover with a shirt, a golf shirt that's got two logos on it, SEC Network on one patch, and then QT on the other patch. And then you could just have like the flavors on the back, peach, raspberry. We need to go Talladega Nights on this thing.
Listen, I just had one. I had one today. I mean, I had the raspberry unsweet tea today, and it's a winner, man. I'll be busting some of those out in Hoover. Trust me.
Hoover, I'm going to have their unsweet tea. I'm going to say, I've heard your unsweet tea is very legendary.
That's right. Famous.
But listen, you know what, Kendall? Bucky's, right? The Bucky's stores. Yeah. Is that Texas? Is that originated in Texas?
They're putting one in Alabama and North Carolina. But yeah, it's glorious.
Yeah, they have one. They just opened one here in middle Georgia somewhere. But I discovered on the way from Austin to College Station, there's a Bucky's that I stop at that has some great unsweet tea as well. That's like a close third, probably.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I think the fact they have like 800 different types of foods there kind of top overall though.
Yeah, no.
So good.
Bucky's might be the greatest place on earth. I'm just saying, there's like Disney World and Bucky's.
Yeah, it's a just Disney World of convenience stores.
But hey, just don't go to Bucky's on I-10 if you don't want coronavirus.
Oh yeah, be careful. Okay. The mask wearing, not at a high level at Bucky's probably.
There might be like 8,000 people in there.
Oh gosh, not socially distanced. All right, Coach Neil, round two. What are you going with?
I'm going to go. This is one. It's your heart. I'm probably going to rip this one right out of your fingertips. I like Florida State and Notre Dame.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think Notre Dame is the great story of this year. I think it is awesome. Nobody saw it coming. They've pissed off some people along the way. They've got some, you know, Notre Dame pisses people off to begin with just because they're Notre Dame. Now you've got Dan McDonald all hot and bothered about him having to miss that third game up there. And it's an important game. I mean, it's certainly Louisville needs those type of games right now. So, not only that, seeing Notre Dame be where they are in college baseball right now is great, right? The brand, the whole thing is great. But I think on the other side, I think Florida State is a team that really needs to win this series. I think they need it for a lot of reasons. It has been up and down for them this year. It's really a strange season. I expected more out of the Seminoles this year. I think a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. They got some guys really coming along. Matthew Nelson right now, if people out there, you need to watch highlights of this kid. He is
Buster 2.0. Let's go.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, exactly. And by the way, was it 2008 Buster was playing at Florida State?
Yeah.
Think about it. I mean, it seems like that was like 2 years ago. 2008. Yep. But anyway, I just think that's a really important series. You got two marquee brands, and you got one team trending really high, and you got one team that's just trying to trend, period. So yep. I'm looking forward to that one.
I like it. KR, what are you going for round two?
I'm going to go out west, Arizona at Stanford. You know, Arizona has played some terrific baseball lately. For the most part, they're pitching well. They're hitting like they have been all season long. But I feel like this Arizona's team – it's just starting to be really consistent. You know, they played a really good Grand Canyon team last night. I want to say they kind of blew past them. And so Arizona's finally playing at a very high level across the board. Stanford, you know, we talk about surprises. I mean, Stanford early last season, if Dave Esker would be the first one to tell you, like, they were flat out terrible. Like, they mm-hmm. were bad. Like, he thought they were embarrassingly bad. So the fact that they've been really good this year, you know, Brock Jones, Tim Tawa, he's kind of a bounce-back player. He was a guy that, you know, a couple of years ago we all really liked, and he got off to a little bit of a slow start last year with an injury. But, you know, he's playing really well for him. Zach Gretsch out of the bullpen's been outstanding. So I'll be very interested to see. This is kind of like, for me, like Stanford's biggest test of the year.
And for sure.
I'm curious to see if the Cardinal can pass it, because I still don't think we really know, like, how good Stanford is. It's weird to say in May, but they, you know, they haven't played the best teams in that league just yet.
No, it's a great point. I think that's – yeah, I'm fascinated. I don't know what to make of Stanford right now, but I do know they're talented. Arizona's playing their ears off right now. You know what's funny, Coach Neal, is Kendall. I don't know Kendall's five series, and I don't want to pilfer one of his series. So I'm trying to read them, and it's I've never played Kendall in poker. Just pilfer.
I'm a man of America. Like I don't just stick with the SEC runes.
I know. That's why I'm trying to read. Okay, so here's my second series. I'm just going totally homer this whole time. So, former Sun Devil that we coached, Robbie McClellan, is the head coach at New Jersey Institute of Technology. Go Highlanders. So, the Highlanders are now in the America East. They're having a good year. They're 14-14 in the league. Coach McClellan, he was a JUCO right-hander out of Liberal, Kansas, Seward County, Seward County Saints. Played for the Liberal BJs. They're going to Stony Brook. Stony Brook is back. The Brook is back. They're 18-6. So this is not of great consequence, but gave me a chance to give a shout-out to my boy, Robbie McClellan. Coach Neal, will have you know, in the summer of 2000, I literally went to Liberal, Kansas twice to recruit Robbie McClellan. It is not an easy place to get to. So there you go. Liberal, Kansas in the house.
Where exactly is Liberal – where is Liberal, Kansas?
It's southwest Kansas, and it's the only reason you would go would be to recruit a junior college right-hander with a really good breaking ball. Yeah, like, no offense, great people, but I've not been back since. So it was great. But Robbie is now – how about this? He, like, New Jersey Institute of Technology is like – that's like North Jersey. That's like New York City. This kid went from Liberal, Kansas to basically Gotham. It's amazing, but he's great, and he's doing a good job there. And they're finally – they were in the Atlantic Sun, which was ridiculous. Now they're in the – I think it's the America East, and it's a good fit. It's so go Highlanders. Coach Neal, we're back to you.
All right. Only because it's the only top 10 matchup of the week. We can't overlook it, and it makes Kendall angry when I talk about two Texas teams.
Pilfer.
I like TCU and Texas. I mean, obviously, these are outstanding teams. Texas has had a great year, coming off a tough weekend, though. TCU's on a roll. Schloss doing it again. You know, I just these are real teams. These are teams that can win it all.
Yeah.
And I think we find out a little bit about them this weekend. I mean, you're going to see some great, they're both swinging it pretty well. You know, I think Texas has had a little bit of a trouble on the road at TCU in the past, like a lot of teams, nothing new there. And I just think that, you know, I think these are two teams that are Omaha worthy and championship series worthy. That's so you don't get that very often in the regular season. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. And they're playing for the league championship. I mean, that's yeah it's like game on. Like, who's going to win that league? I like it. KR, round three, what are you going with?
I'm looking at Mississippi State of South Carolina. You know, Mississippi State is
that's a good one.
Yes, Mississippi State sitting in a pretty good position right now. They're in a great spot for a top eight seed. South Carolina, though, still a really interesting team. They could kind of play the Ole Miss of last week this weekend. You know, Ole Miss last weekend sweep South Carolina at home. All of a sudden, they're not only back in the top 16, they're sitting at the 10 spot. South Carolina, I'm not sure they can get to the 10 spot, but they're back out as a host. If they win that series against Mississippi State, I mean, there's a very strong argument for them to be right back in there. So South Carolina had a bad weekend last weekend, getting swept. But they can get right back in the thick of things if the series win over Mississippi State this weekend. And the big key for South Carolina is, you know, they're going to pitch. The key is, can they hit? They just didn't. They didn't hit with consistency against Arkansas and on the road against Ole Miss. They're going to have to do it this weekend against Hell State.
Yeah, that's good. Tell me if you guys agree with this. So I looked at that one too, KR. I think it's a great pick. And here's why it's fascinating to me. The two teams are similar in that I'm very convicted on their pitching staffs. I mean, more convicted on Mississippi State. Their pitching staff is stupid good. But South Carolina's, I think, is an Omaha-worthy pitching staff. But I have reservations about both position player groups. They look really good one night, not as good the next night. They have they're not well-rounded position player groups. I think they're kind of limited in some ways. But here's the point I'm getting to. Mississippi State is three games ahead of South Carolina when it comes to SEC record, but they feel like it's more than a three-game gap to me. And so I think this is an opportunity for South Carolina to, for someone like me, to say, no, we're closer to the Mississippi States than you think we are. Are you guys near me on that, or what are your thoughts? You go first, Coach Neal.
I'll say this, is that Thomas Farr, their Friday night guy for South Carolina, might have the toughest task going in college baseball. He's a really good pitcher, but you wouldn't know it from his record because they've struggled to put runs on the board for him on Friday nights or the opening game of the series. But I'm with you on their pitching staff. It is super solid, right? Mm-hmm. They may have one of the best number three starters going, a true freshman.
Oh, I love Will Sanders. I'm Team Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, big kid, and he's going to put on 15, 20 pounds next year, and he's already throwing 95, 96. And, I just think he's a Friday night guy waiting to happen. But I'm with you. I think South Carolina, though, is going to have to find some way to win the first game. You can't keep putting yourself in a situation where you got to win on Saturday and Sunday to win a series. You got to give yourself a little room. So we'll see. And to me, that's the big question. Can they win a game one?
I like it. KR.
My next series is going
to No, not a series. Any you want to put a bow on Mississippi State, South Carolina? Well, let me just ask you the question. Do you feel like the gap between Mississippi State and South Carolina is significant, or do you think these teams are maybe closer than we think?
For like a team I have conviction in the postseason, Mississippi State for me by a significant margin. I just think
that's kind of where I am.
I have a lot of faith in Will Bednar. Christian McLeod can be a little off and on, but, you know, when you look at their bullpen depth is phenomenal. I think the thing with Mississippi State, too, is, like, if you look at those guys top to bottom offensively, like, they don't blow you away, especially if you're enamored with the stat sheet. But what they do is they get big hits. Like, guys like Tanner Allen, Logan Tanner, Luke Hancock this year at times has gotten huge hits. They have a penchant for getting that big hit. And so – you kind of throw the numbers out a little bit when you have a team like that who's such a clutch club. And the clutch factor with Mississippi State, no offense to South Carolina, but the clutch factor is like a 70 with Mississippi State, and it's probably like a 30 at best with South Carolina right now.
Yeah, I mean, program momentum-wise, Mississippi State's got tons of it, and South Carolina's trying to rebuild it. By the way, Mississippi State's pitching staff, it's like a witness protection program for guys that throw a million miles an hour. Like, every week they roll out an arm. Like, Preston Johnson is top of mind for me. Preston Johnson, what? Like, he was the guy that sat next to me in the accounting class. He's not But then he takes the mound for Mississippi State and he's throwing 100. And it's like, we didn't even know who he was. Anyway.
Hey, no, seriously. Like, so I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'm sitting there watching Mississippi State game. And this is, I can't remember who the pitcher was now. But, like, I look back and he did not pitch at Globe Life and I saw State. So this makes sense. But, like, he came in the game and I literally kind of, like, looked down at the, like, my notes. And I'm like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, comes in there and, you know, he wasn't throwing 98, but he was like 92, 94. I'm sitting there like, who the hell is this guy?
It's crazy. You
know,
all right.
You know, oh, it reminds me, though, let me just tell you, we had Louisville Vanderbilt last night, Tuesday night game, right? Thinking midweek guys, we had Carter Lohman for Louisville, came out busting 96 right out of the gate with a nasty slider, and Christian Little, a true freshman, was throwing 95, and we're like, what's going on? This is a Tuesday night.
Tuesdays aren't what they used to be, so.
No.
All right, so guys, let me give you. I'm gonna stay in the Northeast. I'm having a tough time getting myself out of the Northeast.
You're a homer.
I know, seriously, like just really
it's sad.
Strutting.
It really is. It's sad.
Oh gosh, I'm leaning into it right now. So, Northeastern out of Boston, they've won 13 in a row, gentlemen, and they are 11-0 in the Colonial, and they are going to play at Hofstra, which I know you guys know, but I want to say this for the audience: Hofstra is Long Island's largest private university, and yes, I do have their Google page right up on my screen, their Wikipedia page. So,
hey, if you're a true Northeastern guy, you wouldn't even need to Google that to know that.
I know, but I am faux everything. I am not, faux Northeastern. I've been on the West Coast for 20 plus years. So anyway, the pride of Hofstra University, but I really just wanted to use this as an excuse to give Northeastern and the Fighting Mike Glavins a shout out because they are crushing right now.
Yeah.
So,
you're a bigger school in need of a coach who gets it and knows how to get the most out of his program. Keep an eye on Mike Glavin. That guy's done an awesome job.
Yes. Amen. Coach Neal, round four.
Round four. I've got Alabama at Vanderbilt back in the SEC this weekend. Vanderbilt's lost three straight games. I mean, like, what's going on? Jack Leiter's giving up bombs left and right. Mm-hmm. Hasn't gone over five innings his last two starts. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with him, but I'm just wondering if it's that time of the year, right? Maybe you've seen it before. Maybe a guy takes a – I'm not saying this is going to be the case, but sometimes you see a coach sit a guy for a week and let him just kind of get his juice, mojo back, whatever it may be. It's been a grind. There's a lot of pressure on Jack Leiter. Kumar, you know, had a little blip, but he's back. He looked great last at it. But it's, I'm anxious to see what's going on with Vanderbilt. And Alabama's an up-and-comer, man. I think they're one of the teams around the country. Unless you really focus in on the SEC, you really haven't paid much attention to Alabama. But what Coach Bohannon's doing over there is he's getting some guys. He's getting guys believing, right? It's been a while, man. And what they've been through in terms of coaches and stuff over the last five. I know this group, there might only be one or two guys left over from what it was. But I'm anxious. And I said it when we came on the air. When Alabama is good in anything, right, they bring people to Hoover Met or they bring people to the SEC tournament. We know the fan base and football and all this stuff. It's good when Alabama the whole thing is better when Alabama's better. So I hope the Tide get in the mix and can hang around and, you know, make some noise.
You know, it's really interesting. Like, Alabama, I feel like, has done an amazing job this year. We can consider Connor Prelip has been in and out with injuries.
Yeah, non-factor.
Is once again out with an injury. So, I mean, they've put a lot of pressure on guys like Dylan Smith, and he's delivered.
Yep. Amen. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. Boy, you know, it's like we're not pulling for Alabama because that means by definition you're pulling against somebody else. But, yeah, it's like Brad Bohannon and that staff have worked so hard to kind of get this back rolling. And I just worry that the stretch run at Vandy, at LSU, Mississippi State at home, that's tough sledding. But they are at 11 wins already, so if my math is right. So, anyway, Kendall, what do you got for Series 4?
My last one is going to be pod play, guys. I'm going to go up north. I'm actually going to go back to the Northeast to Piscataway, New Jersey.
Yes.
Steve Owens, the former Bryant coach, he's done an incredible job at Rutgers this year. Rutgers was picked 10th in the Big Ten. Rutgers right now, guys, is inching towards making the postseason. They're 17-13 in the league. Right now, we have them right on the bubble. The fact they're even being mentioned as a bubble team is pretty incredible. And they've got Indiana and Nebraska at home. They'll play both teams twice this weekend. I tell you what, if they can win three out of four or split, go 2-2 this weekend, I mean, I think they're in the field. going down the stretch. Now, they'll have to take care of business down the stretch, but I think they'd be on the good side of the bubble. And that's a pretty incredible story when you look at Harry Rutkowski and company. They've done a really, really nice job at Rutgers this year, and that's kind of been the theme of college baseball, right? All these programs that have taken a step forward, like Pitt. You know, Pitt was finished near the bottom of the ACC. They might have been finished. They might have been picked at the bottom of the ACC, literally. And you know, they'll be in a regional and might even host. So it's been cool.
Let me ask you this, so before we move on, this, like, what's going on with the Big Ten in baseball? Right? I mean, there's always one team that has a good run, and we talk about them. But as a whole, and I'm tired of the weather talk. Right? I mean, it I know it's a factor. I know it is. But I look at Notre Dame and what they're doing this year. Right? I mean, they got as bad as anybody. Why can't the Big Ten string together three, four teams? I'm not saying get seven or eight. Be competitive every year, and they're in your top 25, and we're talking about them consistently. I don't understand why they can't seem to put it together, because I know there's talent up there.
Well, I would say this, and Runes can kind of weigh in as a guy who's been in a northern school, but, I mean, I would say this about the Big Ten. Is I don't think the Big Ten is lacking teams in the top 25 this year because they're not good. I think the Big Ten is lacking teams because it's hard to know how good they really are, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've had Nebraska in there. Rutgers sweeps them. We have Indiana in there. We'll see what they do this week. And we had Michigan there a few weeks ago. Rutgers swept them. So, like, maybe Rutgers is really that good.
Right.
Big Ten's profile has gotten better. You know, the facilities have gotten better. They're making a stronger commitment. The coaches are still way behind in that regard, but they're getting better. You know, programs like Indiana, Rick Heller, I think, has done a phenomenal job in Iowa. Obviously, don't need to talk about what Eric Backage has done at Michigan. But there's other programs like Northwestern. Suddenly, they care about baseball. Like, they built a new ballpark. Spence Allen's getting a lot of support. You look at what Rutgers is doing. Purdue's built a new ballpark. So, the profile of that league is getting better. But you are right in the sense that, like, they've got to have teams beyond Michigan make noise. And it's just unfortunate that last year got canceled, right? Because Michigan has that big run. And I even talked to Eric Backage about this in the offseason. He's like, we have this big run that it's almost like when the season got canceled, like, it deflated everything. Because, like, how many really remember that Michigan played for the national championship 2 years ago? The casual fan doesn't remember that anymore. So he kind of felt like that was a huge opportunity for that league, and somebody kind of put a little pin in their balloon.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, I'm going to give you guys a couple rapid fire ones. So Old Dominion, who had a big weekend against Charlotte, they play UTSA. UTSA's got a solid team, gave LSU all they wanted. Omaha, the Mavs, KP's Mavs at North Dakota State. The Bison are 27-13. And then I always got to give you a wax series, Coach Neal. Sac State kind of they got taken down by Grand Canyon last week, but they're going to play Cal Baptist. Cal Baptist is not tournament eligible until 2024, but Gary Adcock is a really good coach, and they are building a real – you know, they were a Division II power, and as soon as they – they're going to be like Grand Canyon. As soon as they get Division I eligible, they will be a factor for the postseason immediately out there. So Sac State, you know, they're still, I think, a very – you know, they could easily win the WAC tournament, but Sac State at Cal Baptist has my attention also. Coach Neal, we're going to do one more for you too, Kendall. So, Coach Neal, you got number five for us?
Yeah, and only because I want to watch him play, because I love watching him play. And that's Georgia and Arkansas, and I just want to watch the Hawks play, man. Kevin Copps to come in and pitch. I wish he could pitch every game. I don't know what's going on with him, but it is remarkable how he is unhittable. I mean, it is remarkable to me. And college baseball fans need to find the Arkansas game this weekend and watch Kevin Copps pitch. It is awesome. Christian Franklin has been fantastic. I mean, I love what Arkansas is doing, man. I love what Dave Van Horn throws out there every single game. It's awesome to see. It's great baseball at a high level, and they expect to win, and it's awesome. And the other part of that is I want to see what Georgia does now. C.J. Smith, they were hoping to get him back, one of their starters. He would shut down for the remainder of the year, which can be a big blow for them in terms of their weekend rotation. But Georgia's – they've got a tough road. And, Kendall, you might – and Runes can probably chime in on this. I mean – if you were to say they are a tournament team right now, what would you give them their chances knowing what they have in front of them?
Yeah, that's a tough nine spot. Kendall, what are you thinking? I mean, I forget. I just listened to the Nerdcast. Do you guys have them just out or just in?
Let me go look.
But how about let's mention their three series just for people that don't know. At Arkansas, at Florida, Ole Miss at home. Rut row.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right, that's right.
Second to last team in.
So they were team 63. Wow, like it.
That remaining schedule, yeah, at Arkansas, not liking your chances. At Florida, catching them at a really bad time.
Really bad time.
This could, like, go either way, right? Like, you don't really know what you're going to get from Ole Miss on a given weekend.
Hey, by the way, Coach, you know, Kevin Copps, that I don't think I've ever seen command of a breaking ball like that. He commands his breaking ball like a well-trained dog. It's, like, unreal how it just throw it for a strike whenever you want, like, blindfold him. It doesn't matter. Crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy. He's so good. I love watching him pitch.
Yes. KR, what are you going with? Give me one more here.
Yeah, one more. I've already done five.
I can give you here. I'll give you three, and then you think of one while I'm going.
Okay.
So Fairfield's at Niagara. Fairfield is not undefeated anymore. They're 28-1. They got a new streak started, but Niagara's got an old team. I did that MAC, two A's in MAC conference preview. I know that was must read, you know, material for everybody. So Niagara's 16-11. Illinois State's going to DBU. DBU's starting to separate in the Valley. They're starting to kind of be who DBU is normally. How about, here's a good one out west. UNLV's at Nevada. And that is, like, San Diego State is showing some vulnerability right here. So the Rebs and the Wolfpack Areno, there's three for you. Kendall, you got one?
Yeah, I do. UCLA at Washington State.
I like that. Good one.
Washington State, Brian Green's done an awesome job there. Washington State's, again, kind of like we were talking about a minute ago with these bubble teams, Washington State's knocking on the door to get in the postseason. They still have work to do, but they have two of their last three series at home. UCLA gets that big series win over the weekend against Oregon State. We'll see if that kind of kickstarts those guys. You know, UCLA is kind of like Florida light. You know, Florida's been in a better position than UCLA all season long, but both of those teams were top five preseason. They haven't played like it all year long, UCLA to a lesser extent. But they kind of showed signs of that over the weekend against Oregon State. I'll be very interested to see if they can go on the road against an offensive-heavy team like Wazoo and win that series. If Wazoo can win that series, I mean, they might be close to being on the good side of the bubble. And that's crazy to think this late in the year for a program that's kind of been beaten up a little bit in that league over the last few years.
All right, one quick thing before you're talking about Pac-12 right now. I want your guys' opinion on this. Why? I was talking to my son Sam about it today, explained to him about how good USC used to be in the championships. And I mean, how do they get back? I don't follow them closely enough, but it seems like this should not happen at Southern Cal.
I get an opinion. You want to go first, KR?
Well, I would just say the rise of UCLA. I mean,
yeah, a big problem.
USC was really good. You could look at UCLA, and they got to Omaha once in the 1990s, UCLA did. But when you look at UCLA versus USC, the players that USC was getting in the mid-90s, UCLA is now getting. Who and why is that? John Savage, who was at USC during all this, went to UCLA as a head coach, knew the formula that built up USC, so he's installed that same formula at UCLA. And so USC just never found a way to bounce back from that. I think the other thing too is I thought they made a bad hire in Chad Kruger. I don't think that's really up for debate. Like, the guy was ready to be a college coach, might be the greatest pro coach ever, but was not ready to be a college coach. And I actually thought Dan Hubbs did a pretty good job. But at the end of the day, that USC recruited way too many guys over the years that ended up signing. Like, if you look at the recruiting classes year in and year out, they were getting guys who, like, there was no chance they were showing up to school, right? And so I think they made some miscalculations there. But at the end of the day, two words, John Savage.
Yeah, that's a big – hey, and I would tell you, too, that I like Jason Gill. You know, like, he's got Fullerton roots. And but, you know, the thing I've heard about USC is a private school that costs $1 million a year to go there. And so that means that you have to get excited about the financial aid stuff. And
yeah.
USC has financial aid, but there's 30,000 students that financial aid gets dispersed. Whereas, I don't know, what's Vandy, like 8 or 9,000 students, like, where
– that's like 14 post-grad and undergrads.
Yeah, so yeah, it's just –
10,000 undergrads probably.
So that financial aid gets thinned out, but Kendall's point is the one, right? Like, UCLA has become a top five national program, and that, you know, I think the question is can Southern California support two programs of that ilk? I don't know. Hey, by the way, guys, I'm going to give you one quickly before we wrap. So I have Florida, Kentucky. I referenced. You probably know this, Coach Neal, because you've had Florida probably already. Florida is this. They're going to Kentucky. They're 5-7 on the road this year. 5-7, and they're 26-6 at home. And I do feel like Florida has turned a corner, but you know, like I felt like they turned a corner after Ole Miss too, and they kind of sort of had turned the corner. So I'm really curious, and you know, Kentucky's playing for their life. Like these last 9 SEC games for Kentucky are their every game is an elimination or not elimination, but it's kind of do or die for them. So I'm really curious to see. Gun to my head, I feel like the Gators have found the switch, but you know, we're gonna find out.
It's why we play the game, right, Runes?
Yeah, that's right. It's just like Coach Neal. I'll leave you guys with this. It's just like every year I feel like Berkey is ready to beat you in golf, Coach Neal. I feel like, hey, the law of averages, like Coach Neal can't continue to beat Chris Burke over and over again. Berkey's going to do it this year. And every year I leave Hoover disappointed, right? So it's like sometimes the law of averages doesn't work. Winners just win.
Right. Let me just show you this one quick thing real quick. This is a baseball, and this is the one time the one time he ever beat me was in Nashville. And I don't know if you guys can see this. It's a signed baseball. Chris Burke signed it, and it says, "To Dave, thanks for 3-putting on 18. Love, Chris Burke." That is the only way he beat me was because I 3-putted on the final hole. And this is how excited he was. He autographed a baseball for me.
See, that's beautiful. That's why we love Berkey.
Did he ever stop talking? That's the question.
No, we ran through the entire match, every single shot, every hole, through lunch, through dinner, through the game we did that night. So that's the only problem with Berkey is that when you play golf with him, you're now all day with Berkey. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So actually, it's not just the golf. It's all day.
Yeah, it's like playing them twice. You gotta play the match live, and then you gotta hear about it.
Right.
Yeah, afterwards. Yeah. So, Coach Neal, this was awesome. Thank you for joining us. This was super fun.
Nah, my two baseball dudes. I mean, I feel like I don't give Kendall enough props because you know, like you had Google up during this thing. I have like D1Baseball.com up. So I feel like I need more. I need to do more. I feel guilty about reading so much. And I just want to say thank you, Kendall. All I can say is that I wouldn't be where I am today without Kendall Rogers.
The purveyor of information. That's awesome. Very good. Gentlemen, have a great weekend. Good stuff. Peace.